Hello, everybody.
Hey, hi, hello.
Welcome to Cereal from the Box. My name's Gianna.
And I'm Marie.
And we are going to talk to you about life, recovery, eating well, and beyond.
For sure. Gianna, how's your week been?
Well, my week's been pretty busy. I just went back to teaching in the studio. Mm-hmm. I've been teaching dance and nannying, and also the tire fell off my car while I was driving. It's fine, I'm fine. It was just a traumatizing experience.
That sounds very terrifying.
Anyways, how are you doing? It was terrifying.
Okay. I'm doing okay. My highlight of this week, as you kind of know, but I don't know if I told you this part, I have these, well, I have an abundance of feral cats in my neighborhood, and
I love them.
Yes, they're very cute and adorable, but they keep having kittens that come into my backyard, and that's like very nice and everything, but then we're going to have like an out of control feral cat population. So I've been trying to like work with this organization that allow like helps you to like to trap them, and then you can, you know, get them fixed so they can't keep reproducing. And then you just like release them back into their habitat, which is my backyard. There's...
Wait, why are all these cats living in your yard?
They're not like living in my yard. They're throughout like our neighborhood, but for whatever reason, I guess like the garden that my mom has in our backyard is perfect for hiding kittens. So there's been two separate mom cats that have had or had brought their litters at some point this summer / now into my backyard. So there was one mom with five kittens. So many. They were very, very cute. Like probably like 4 or 5 weeks old, probably closer to 5 weeks old. And I set up some traps that was given to me by this lady that I've been working with. And I was able to get both the mom cat and all five kittens, thankfully. So now the kittens can be fostered, so they can be adopted. And now mom is fixed, so she won't be having any more kittens, which is a good thing for sure. So that was my exciting win of the week.
Good. So this week we did not get any questions in our DMs, so we will be skipping that segment and diving right in to our topic of the week, which is
exercise and how to improve your relationship with exercise. So I was kind of thinking like last week, you know, like we talked about our backstories, we talked a bit about recovery, a bit about what, you know, our eating disorder was like for us. So I felt like this week it would be helpful to maybe just have more of a conversation that's focused on how we can work through, you know, the like associations that a lot of us have with exercise and how it's always usually kind of like fixated around this like idea of like we have to burn calories or we need to lose weight and exercises to help us tone up and to be thinner and yada 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 yada. So I thought maybe it could be helpful to like share our perspectives of things that we've done in order to like try to improve our relationship with exercise so that we're not coming from that disordered diet culture kind of mindset, which ultimately like I feel like never leaves anyone enjoying their exercise or liking exercise. Like it's, yeah, just kind of like that punishment cycle, so to speak. So,
yeah, so like definitely that was getting out of that was consciously deciding not to use exercise as a punishment for myself. And it did change even the way I dance, because that's my job, supposedly. Because sometimes I was thinking more about the calories I was burning doing it rather than focusing on my actual dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Or like thinking about how I looked, yeah, instead of my actual craft.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like when I'm dancing without my body and mind, mm-hmm. it really makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like, wow, yeah, especially like with dancing, because then there's so much. I feel like I see videos all the time on like YouTube. It's like a dancer day in the life, like of like a someone in the professional ballet or something like that. And they like all talk about like the strenuous like amount of physical activity that they have to go through in a day in order to, you know, keep up with their technique and all that other stuff. But then there's always like a focus on food too, and like how they're maintaining their physique and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like that could just be so distracting when there's other things that you know, need to be focusing on, and not just, you know, how you look all the time and being so in your head like that.
Definitely. And like, the less you have to focus on it, the better you end up doing.
Yeah.
So if it was like a runner who's like, how little can I eat in order to look like a runner? They're not going to run as well as somebody who's running because they love it and not worrying about how they look while they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure, like, and I mean, you could probably attest to this a bit too, but like the injuries that people get from, you know, when you're like running on fumes, quite literally, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, it's so much easier to get injured when you're not fueling yourself properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can tell you that one time I sprained both my ankles at the same time because I was just so exhausted.
Right.
It was actually, I'm just finally getting over that injury. Like,
if yeah.
you can see my ankles right now, they're the least swollen that they've been in like two years.
Yeah.
So.
Oh my goodness.
And it's so easy to lose focus of why you're doing things, you know?
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
for me, it's different because it's my job also. Mm-hmm. But it's like you lose sight of why you're doing it.
In the first place.
But it's like you're moving your body because you love to do it, not because you want to look like you like to move your body.
Yeah.
At least that's what it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally second that. And I mean, I feel like before we jump into it, because I want to like acknowledge that I feel like everyone has to go through different phases when it comes to like moving away from the disordered like diet culture mindset when it comes to exercise, in order to like start integrating exercise and movement. I really like the word movement into like your life in a more intuitive and positive way, in a healthy way. And so, I mean, like, I know for me, because like I had to go through, you know, a formalized treatment process, and I'm sure like a lot of people too are recommended by the people, the healthcare professionals, mental health care professionals, nutritionists, whatever, that they're working with, that they shouldn't exercise for a period of time, mm-hmm. which I think is like totally valid if like you're listening and that's where you're at right now, to kind of go with that process and try to see it as kind of a respectful boundary. I want to touch on that more later, but like a respectful boundary that you're kind of creating for yourself, rather than this is something that you just can't do or you'll never be able to do again. And if you never want to exercise again, that is totally fine too. Like, I feel like we're definitely not here to tell anyone that they should be exercising, shouldn't be exercising.
No, if you don't want to exercise, I'm like so jealous of you. That must be so relaxing. Just like,
yeah, there's so many other things that you can do in the day. So I feel like this episode might be more for people who are either trying to just improve their relationship or starting to like integrate more positive movement back into their lives. Hopefully this will be a little bit helpful for you. So I asked Gianna when we were preparing for this if we could like make like a list. So Gianna, do you want to like start with something that's kind of helped improve your relationship with exercise?
Yes, let me pull it up.
Amazing.
So one thing that helped me improve my relationship with exercise was just giving myself
the choice of whether or not I wanted to do additional exercise.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's definitely different because part of it is my job. But for example, if something hurts, I have the option to say, no, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stop now. Versus pushing through the pain, pushing mm-hmm. through the mental cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if I'm tired, I don't have to go do anything else.
Yeah.
If I'm tired, I don't have to. And just realizing that I can make that choice. And if I do choose not to do more, it doesn't make me a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make me a failure to stop.
Yeah.
Because it means that I'm listening to my body.
Yeah. I kind of had something similar down. And I said, challenge perfectionism by giving permission to not follow through. Which was, I feel like, kind of in the same vein as that. Because I feel like if I'm like starting to work out and I have like a workout video pulled up or whatever, I'm like, I have to do this perfectly. I have to do everything that they do at the intensity that they're doing it at. I have to do it for the whole amount of time that the video is for, whatever. And I feel like what I've started to try to do recently is give myself that choice, like you were saying, to be like, actually, I am absolutely 100% not feeling this. So I can do something else, or I can just plain out stop, or I can take a break or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I just have to remember, like we do have brains, and if your brain's telling you not to do something, it's probably for a reason.
Mm-hmm. I think what's like difficult, right, is because we already are in this state of like, we should be doing X amount of exercise, or we should be doing this or that. So it almost feels like, I mean, especially when we just talk about exercise, I don't know, as a society, a society that we live in, that it's always like, if you don't feel like doing it, do it anyways, is kind of the way that we talk about exercise. And I feel like it normalizes this idea that if we feel like we should do something, that means that we should be doing it and we have to do that. But I feel like that doesn't allow you to approach movement and exercise from an intuitive standpoint, because you don't know how to listen to your body or what your body's trying to say to you. If every time your mind's coming in being like, no, but you should do this because exercise is good for you, or you should do it because you're not motivated right now, but like, it'll be helpful, like you'll feel good about it later or whatever.
But what if you don't? What if you have 2 sprained ankles later?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, I feel like that's so hard to break, because it can be very confusing to, like, how do you pick out, like, what's a should statement versus what you're actually feeling, and what is you being unmotivated versus you just, you know, you're, I don't know, maybe, like, feeling kind of depressed, so maybe, like, going on a walk would actually, like, boost your mood. Like, how do you pick through all that, you know, kind of information and sort that out?
A little walk?
Mm-hmm.
What about going on a little walk? Because I feel like going on a walk around the block is totally different than going to the gym and pumping some iron.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
And I feel like if you don't know, then go with like a light option. I don't know. That's just what I would do. Like if I didn't want to go on a run, maybe I would just go on a walk.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I feel like sometimes we take a bit of an all or nothing approach. So we feel like we should go on the run, and maybe that would boost our mood, and maybe it would do all these positive things, but it's actually like, I'm really tired and don't want to. So like, instead of either you do it or don't do it, maybe there's some gray area that you can at least try out to see if you really want to be doing that. So like a short walk around the block could definitely be more better suited to help you figure out if that's really what you want to be doing in that moment, or would you rather be in bed watching Netflix? Like, and either option is an okay option. There's no good or bad option in that. It's just trying it out. Yeah, I don't know if I had anything more to say on that topic, but I feel like the summation of that point is, don't should yourself into doing exercise. Try to be more in tune with your body. Yeah. And remember that, like, you're not a good or a bad person for the kind of movement that you do. I really liked when you said that. So, okay. This one is, like, super, super specific to me. And I don't know how generalizable it is. But since, you know, the whole pandemic has happened, right? Moved back home to live with my parents. And in my bedroom, like, I have, like, a dresser. And then on top of the dresser is, like, a vanity mirror. I don't really know what you call it. But it's, like, a pretty big, like, full body kind of mirror thing. And so I kind of, like, started doing some more exercise because of free time during the pandemic. And what I kind of found to be working for me or whatnot is there's like a bunch of fitness instructors in my community that kind of got together and made like a Facebook group, and they like posted videos for people to kind of follow along to since all the gyms were closed. And I've seen like one of the fitness instructors before and done classes with her, and I like how her classes are, and I like the kinds of things that she does in her classes. So that's particularly a kind of movement that I find enjoyable to do when I follow along to her classes. But because I'm in my house doing exercise and stuff like that, I had to like close the door to my bedroom so I don't like disturb other people that are working or whatnot. And also like my door like rattles if I'm like moving in such a way, like it shakes the door and it's just like obnoxious. So I have to close it. And it gets so hot in my room. And like personally for me, sweating ain't it. I really don't like being super sweaty, and I don't like the feeling of like having like a sweaty t-shirt on. So what I've been doing instead is just wearing like a sports bra and shorts. And I'll set my computer on top of my dresser, and I'll like be doing the exercise class with my sports bra on and my shorts. And like, for someone who's working through their body image, it's a challenge to constantly be seeing what my body looks like in front of a mirror. I bet you can. But I found it to be like a positive thing too, because it's like at this point, like I am doing it because it's hot. I'm trying to cool myself down. Like it functionality wise makes the most sense for me to not be in a t-shirt that covers my body so I can feel more secure in my body. And that slight challenge for me personally of like looking in my mirror and not body checking, not doing anything that's like I'm judging myself in this moment. It's literally just like I am an observer. And this is what my body looks like when I do this and this and whatever it is that I'm doing. And I definitely don't let it distract me to the point that I can't concentrate on what I'm watching and seeing. Like I'm still watching the instructor for the most part, trying to figure out what she's leading us through or whatever. But it's been just like that little extra challenge of seeing my body in different states when I don't usually see it, and being okay with this is what my body looks like in this moment doing this activity. And I really feel like it like kind of helps, because like in the past, like my associations with like stepping in a gym every single time is like this like anxiety response of like everyone's looking at me, I feel bad about my body, I'm here to change what my body looks like, etc., etc. So just being able to like do it in a more or less kind of like safe space with that slight challenge of like not necessarily hiding my body while I'm exercising has been kind of helpful in terms of like taking away that pressure that exercise is for changing my body or is associated with like negative body image and things like that.
Yeah, so I definitely can relate.
Yeah, so when I was in college, I literally spent easily 6 hours a day watching mm-hmm. myself in the mirror wearing a leotard mm-hmm. and tights. And I can honestly say that not having to do that anymore for such long amounts of time has made my life better. It has been refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, accepting your body for the work that it's doing rather than what you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like, when you see yourself in the mirror, or when I see myself in the mirror and I'm in my body, I'm not judging it for the exercise that it's doing. I'm like, wow, your body is doing exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, my body can do it. My body can mm-hmm. do it.
Yeah, which I feel like, kind of side note, this past school year at my field placement that I had for my social work program, I was at a school and I was doing a group about centered around body image with another intern there. And one of the kinds of things that I've always learned about that makes sense to me is how do we shift like the narrative in our head of what does my body look like or how do I feel in my body based off of all this like thoughts and chatter that's going on inside my head or like situations that are happening in my life to what can my body do for me? What does my body allow me to do? Your body allows you to dance. My body lets me ride horses, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I feel like it's a lot easier to be grateful for your body and appreciative of your body when you can kind of view your body from that standpoint. Yeah. So I think that's like what's been helpful with like the mirror exercise. And it sounds kind of like for you too recently, it was like being able to like appreciate your body for what it's being able to do in that moment instead of like how it looks doing that thing. So I don't know. Cause I mean, like, obviously, like if I were to say that this is what I'm doing to myself, like a year ago, I would have been like, you're crazy. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it fluctuates so much and people are obviously like at different places and stuff like that. But like a year ago, like, yeah, being in a gym with only a sports bra on, being by myself exercising with only a sports bra on, like, that would have, like, just brought up so many negative judgments. So I feel like, I don't know, all that kind of wax and wanes and it, like, fluctuates or whatnot. But, like, currently I found it to be, like, a good challenge, not too outside of my comfort zone, but enough to, like, be okay with it without it being like triggering or whatever. So, and I think it's like the practice part that helps as well. Like the more you do something repetitively, the more like habitual it gets. Like the first time it's kind of like, ah, but then after that it's like, okay, I can do this. It's fine. So, okay. You got another one on your list?
Yeah. So another thing that's helped me is to diversify my training.
Okay. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so, like, if you're specializing in only one kind of activity, it's like, oh, I'm a runner, or like, oh, I'm a dancer. I feel like it puts a lot of pressure on you to, like, fit in the mold, but by removing that, I don't know, like, label, it has removed a lot of the pressure and allowed mm-hmm. me to feel, like, just like an active person. So like now I feel like I can do things just because I enjoy them, not because I have to.
Yeah.
And like it gives me the freedom to try different things. Like, for example, me and my boyfriend, we like to kick the soccer ball around. Am I a soccer player?
No.
No. But do I enjoy it? Yes.
Yeah.
It's very fun. And it's active.
No, I feel like that makes sense because like obviously, like, you know, another tip that I feel like is not like, what's the word? Not like well known, but I feel like on social media, if anyone ever talks about like how to improve your relationship with exercise, number one thing is like find movement that you enjoy, which I think is like part of what you were saying. So it's like, you know, find different things that you like, try out different things so you can figure out what you like and what you don't like. But I think what's like really interesting about what you said is like when you place so much of your identity around being an athlete in a certain way, or exercising in a certain way, I feel like that can lead you down two paths. One, if you get injured or you have to stop doing that thing, that's very hard to deal with. But then two, if it's, you know, something that's been going well for you, at the same time, I feel like it puts a lot of, kind of like what you're saying, pressure, and like it really can, it can be too all-consuming, I guess, in a way. Like if your whole life is revolved, and I mean, in a way, yours is, because it's like your job, it's your passion, et cetera, et cetera. So if your whole life is revolved,
I don't want it to be my whole personality, you know?
Right.
I had some classmates in mm-hmm. college who they let their personalities kind of be lost in becoming this dancer or artist that they wanted to be, and it really messed up their lives because they forgot that after being a dancer or an artist, you have to be a person. Mm. And so I would rather be more than just a dancer, even though it is something that I am. And I feel like sometimes the same thing happens with eating disorders, where having an eating mm-hmm. disorder becomes a part of your personality, even, you know, unknowingly or unwillingly. Either way, I don't think it's healthy to have one thing for sure. be your entire personality.
And I don't know, it makes me think too of like on social media, like fitness accounts. You know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of like their whole brand, is that the one thing that they do is go to the gym, and their whole life is revolved on obtaining their physique or telling other people how they can obtain their physique or whatever. Like that, I mean, that's obviously like a very gross generalization, but I feel like most times, like everything about their account, and thus it feels like about their lives, is all focused around exercise, and thus how they eat, because it's all centered around trying to obtain whatever physique they want to obtain. And it's like, it's hard to like enjoy your life or think about things outside of that if that's all that you are really focused on.
Yeah, and that's why I feel that like diversifying your movement is like you shouldn't feel the pressure to lock down into a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that that can be dangerous too, especially like if you're coming straight from like struggling with an eating disorder and like you're new to recovery, and then it's like, okay, and I'm gonna become a yogi, or I'm gonna become a weightlifter, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
I see so much of that, and I'm always like, no, please, why? Why are you doing this to yourself?
I think it's like, yeah. I mean, I think it's hard because like you're losing a way of coping, losing a way of, you know, how you're operating. So I feel like it's just very easy to kind of switch from one thing to the next, and you just do something that's a bit more socially acceptable. And we know there's plenty of like disordered things that are socially acceptable. So I think it's really easy to kind of fall into that trap. And yeah, I feel like it's kind of like unfortunate, because I feel like it does really take some time to really shift your mindset. Because even if your mindset isn't like, oh, now I'm just trying to get super thin, then your mindset goes, I want to be super strong or whatever. And for me, like it feels more or less like the same thing, just with different adjectives, different names, whatever. I don't really know. I just feel like there's a lot of, and I mean, we could have a whole conversation about social media, but I feel like with social media too, I think in some ways, like, that's what recovery looks like, or, like, is portrayed in that way. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like it's really easy, especially, you know, when people are taking the time to recover on their own, that seems kind of like a good way to ease into it for them. Or that feels like that's, like, an appropriate way to recover, because they're no longer worried about their weight and being thin. They're now worried about this. So they are feeling themselves more than they did in their eating disorder, but So I feel like it definitely presents like a tricky situation, and I don't think necessarily, I mean, for me personally, like, allows someone to like grow a more intuitive relationship with exercise and a relationship that isn't so wrapped up with body image. Because I feel like as long as it's wrapped up with body image in that way, then it's just going to be probably more toxic and harmful for your mental health in the long run.
So do you have anything else on your list?
I do have a couple things on my list. Okay, so this one I feel like is really, really important for me, and kind of what I mentioned earlier. So like setting respectful boundaries. And what I kind of mean by this is like, I have a boundary for myself that if my mood is low or I'm having a really bad body image day, or, you know, maybe something was going on with food and now I feel more guilty or whatever, whatever. So if I'm just not in the right headspace, which for me, I kind of know what that looks like, I will not exercise, period. Like, hard stop. And I feel like for me, I was kind of thinking about this earlier, and I feel like it's not like a rule that I've set for myself. It's not like a rule like how eating disorders have rules where you can't do X, Y, and Z, because otherwise you're a bad person, whatever, whatever, or you're doing something wrong. It's going to cause you to gain weight, whatever, whatever. It's, to me, it seems more like a boundary that I have with myself, and I feel like it's important to have those kinds of boundaries when it comes to exercise, because it, one, prevents that negative association from continuing to happen, and like, you know, like the punishment cycle of like, I feel bad about myself today, so now I have to exercise in order to do something that's good so that I can feel better about myself. Like, I feel like it's a punishment to get me to stop doing things that I don't like, or it's a punishment that I have for not liking myself in that moment, as opposed to something positive and rewarding and a good experience. So I think like having the boundaries, I feel like they come from a place of self-respect, because it allows me to kind of be my more authentic self, I guess, in a way. So I guess what I mean is like, when, like, if I'm upset and then I'm like in a cycle where I have negative thoughts about myself, and then my solution is I need to exercise in order to fix this whole situation that I've created or whatever, I feel like the idea of it is like, I'm exercising to make myself better. I'm exercising to lose weight so I can be a better person, because thin equals better, thin equals happier, whatever, whatever. So I feel like that's like the whole cycle that kind of goes on in my head. So I feel like, how can, if I want to like start being my most authentic self, if recovery is about being my authentic self rather than trying to achieve some perfectionist societal standard that's been placed upon me and told that that's what's good, that's what a good person looks like, that's what a happy person looks like, et cetera, et cetera. I can't be my like authentic self if I'm fostering that cycle. Does that like make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's just really deep.
Thanks. I have a lot of time to think these days.
No, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense. It's just like, I never thought about it that way, because sometimes I feel like I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Because, like, for me, sometimes I have class and I wouldn't graduate if I didn't go, or I have an audition and I won't get the job if I don't show up. So it's like, I never thought about not having that choice. But for any other circumstance, I think it's a really good boundary to think about.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like, obviously, like, you're in a bit of, like, a unique position. But, I mean, even, I mean, I don't know, like, how much this applies for you, even, like, when you're teaching and stuff like that. But the, I guess, exercise that you do or movement that you do in, like, your spare time just because you want to, or when you're teaching class, like, how often are you doing everything with them versus just, you know, not, you know what I mean, not actually dancing, but just doing, just instructing. Like, maybe there's ways that you can find where your boundaries need to be. And, like, those are my boundaries, is that when I'm in that headspace, I don't exercise. But everyone's boundaries could look different for themselves based off of their circumstances.
I mean, I think for me, like, I really enjoy moving and dancing and exercising and trying new things, but the boundary that I need to recognize more often is when I'm in pain.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard for me to stop when something hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just recently that I've started recognizing, like, okay, something hurts, you need to stop, because I don't have an athletic trainer that I can go to anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, my life doesn't depend on this anymore. Like, I'm starting to know to stop when something hurts or when I feel like I'm in a fog.
Yeah. I just feel like, I feel like the self-respect part is so important, because obviously, like, pushing yourself to do something when you're in pain is not respecting your body, and it's not respecting yourself. And I feel like self-respect is so important, because one thing that I learned when I was in treatment, and this, like, really stuck with me for some reason, but they broke down that there's, like, self-esteem, right? And what makes up self-esteem. And then there's three components to self-esteem. There's self-efficacy, which is, like, you know, your belief in your ability to do things. So if you take dancing and you're like, I'm good at dancing, I believe that I can do it, then self-efficacy is high for that, as an example. Then there is self-worth, which I'm sure, like, a lot of us struggle with, because we feel self-worth is, like, externally validated, you know? So with self-worth, I feel like that tends to be low for most people. But the idea is that to know innately that you have worth, which can be a hard concept to wrap your head around. And then the third part is self-respect, which is even, like, I mean, I think the way it was presented to me then is, like, are you doing basic hygiene? That's self-respect. Like, treating yourself, you know what I mean, with kindness. Like, those are little things that you can do. Yeah. And I think, like, the self-respect and the self-worth kind of can go hand in hand a bit, too, because it's, like, if I feel like I'm worthy of, you know, being shown respect, you're more likely to engage in self-respect kind of behaviors, right? But the idea is all these three things, self-efficacy, self-worth, and self-respect, depending on what levels they're at, they kind of all average out, and that's kind of how your self-esteem plays out. So I feel like me with exercise, right? If I'm already, like, my self-worth is low, I'm not feeling good about myself, right? I already feel my self-efficacy is low because I'm feeling really incapable of doing things, of moving my body in the way that I feel like other people can. So there's a lot of comparisons going on there. And then I add the self-respect to the mix, and I disrespect myself by forcing myself to exercise, by punishing myself with exercise. My self-esteem is going to stay really shitty after that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like for me, that's why the boundaries in particular is just so important, and I have to honor those boundaries every time. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I feel like, yeah. And then, I mean, I was thinking about this too. I wrote this down in my notes. Is that, like, I know some people use exercise as kind of like a coping mechanism. So, like, if they're feeling anxious, like, maybe they're compelled to go on a run. Like, that can be sometimes how that relationship is. And I feel like even with something like that, I think it can be helpful to set, like, a boundary of, like, try another coping skill first. Try a different way that you can go about, like, resolving that anxiety or whatever emotional experience it is that you kind of use exercise to deal with before, like, turning to exercise, doing those, trying something else out to kind of work through that.
Yeah. And I really like how you are differentiating exercise for pleasure versus punishment. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that's something that a lot of people do to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Like, I definitely used to do that and still do that.
Yeah, and I think many of us have. I feel like that's a pretty Yeah, a pretty like normal experience. Like, 'cause like I said before, I feel like our society really puts the pressure that like exercise is this normal thing that everyone should be doing all the time. Not all the time, but you know what I mean. Like, there's a lot of pressure to do it consistently, to do it X amount of times a week, and things like that. So it's like when you don't fit that mold, I feel like that brings up a lot of stuff. And then when you already, have a poor relationship with food, your body, yourself, and stuff like that, I feel like exercise gets thrown into this mix as a way to kind of deal with that. And I feel like more often than not, we feel like we should do something, so then we push ourselves farther than what we actually want to be doing. And I feel like it really turns like from what could be a positive experience to a punishment because of how we feel about ourselves and doing something wrong. Especially, like, I mean, if you're using it as like a kind of compensatory behavior. Like, if you binge and then go exercise afterwards, that's a punishment for yourself. You're saying the binging is bad. I shouldn't have done that, and now I need to fix it. And I need to stop doing that. So I feel like it feeds that whole cycle, and it's just really important to try to break out of that, even if it's, uncomfortable to kind of have to sit with some of that stuff.
Definitely. Also, unrelated, I just feel like I see so many people, like when you're in recovery for an eating disorder or like anything else, you do yoga, but like you don't have to do yoga.
Look,
If you don't like yoga, it's okay. You don't have to like
I
it.
will say it right here. I hate yoga. I think it's a great option for people that like it. I do not enjoy it. If it's something you want to try out because you're trying to, find some nice, easy movement, it's like it's good. It's a very mindful activity. It's a good way to kind of be in your body without necessarily having to have all these judgments around it. But it just ain't it for me. It ain't it. So we're not doing it here because I don't like it. And that's okay.
Look, I actually like yoga sometimes, but I'm not a peaceful person and I don't want my exercise to be peaceful. And there's parts that I don't understand. Like, why do you have to lay down at the end for so long? I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't know. Sometimes it
I don't get
feels
it.
good, but if it ain't it for you, it ain't it for you, and that's all good.
And that's the moral of the story, everybody. If it ain't it, it ain't it.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, all right, kids, that is it for today. As a reminder, you can email us your questions, comments, concerns, or fears at cerealfromthebox@gmail.com or DM us at cerealfromthebox on Instagram. Marie, do you want to plug your socials?
Yeah, sure. It's at Elsa with 3 A's underscore Marie. And what's yours, Gianna?
I'm at Gianna Bartolini on Instagram. So, yeah, have a beautiful day, everybody.
Yeah, feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you.
For sure. All right, everybody. See you next time.
Bye, folks.